Guess what, Kyle?
What, Emily?
We're on Patreon.
What's that?
Patreon is where you can be a patron of the Accessible Stall.
What does that mean?
You can simply donate any amount you choose once per month to support our work.
Really? Like, what does the money go to?
The money will go to production costs and transcription.
Did you say transcription? That's like
I
really
sure
important.
Did.
My God, we can actually have accessible podcasting things?
Accessibility on the Accessible Stall. Who knew?
Oh my God, that sounds great. Where do I sign up?
You can go to patreon.com/theaccessiblestall.
I'm going
to
go ahead and do that right now.
Hi, I'm Emily Liddell.
And I'm Kyle Ketchadorian.
And you're listening to another episode of The Accessible Stall.
What are we going to talk about today, Emily?
We're going to talk about bodily autonomy.
Cool.
Yeah, super cool. It's a thing everyone should have.
Yes. End episode. All right.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
No, seriously. It is a very important topic that pretty much directly impacts the lives of every person with a disability on a personal level. I think before we really get into the nitty-gritty of it, that it's best to define what we mean. And what better source for that than Wikipedia, right?
I'm going to let you read this because I have not even pulled up the Wikipedia page, so you go right ahead.
Yeah, they call it body integrity, but they define it as the inviolability of the physical body and emphasizes the importance of personal autonomy and self-determination of human beings over their own bodies.
I am nodding like I had a religious experience.
Yeah, she is. It's kind of ridiculous. Anyway, so basically what that is and how it pertains to us as a group of people.
We should probably start with what prompted this in the first place.
Absolutely.
Which was an article that's caused a bit of hubbub on the disability social medias about the story of a mother who has a son who has cerebral palsy and is autistic. And he has certain behaviors in which he turns violent against himself and begins hitting himself. So the mother took it upon herself to publish a very long article somehow connecting her son's behaviors to violence, the nature of which is like the Holocaust and ISIS.
ISIS, yeah, it was really ridiculous.
And on top of that, she also got super deep into giving away personal information about her kid and shared pictures of him with injuries from his behaviors in the middle of his behaviors. And the whole thing, I mean, not only is it a train wreck of an article and completely overwrought and also super offensive on 20 different levels to...
We counted.
Yeah, we did. Every single one. But it's offensive, obviously, because you're connecting the disability of one kid to the violence of the Holocaust. And that's just offensive, like, on both directions.
But, I mean, even if you take that away, it's sort of just still not...
The article just sucks. It sucks. She's literally just babbling on and on about her child's personal experiences. And, yeah, he's a young kid. But even so, this points to the larger issue that when you have a disability, chances are your body is not always going to be your own. There's going to be people objectifying it and exploiting it and talking about it and writing about it and disclosing your personal information when they shouldn't be. And this L article was proof positive that happens all the time.
Yeah, it was literally there in black and white.
So, clearly I'm a little worked up about this article, but the bigger thing that we want to address is the fact that when you're disabled, a lot of times your body is not your own, and your personal space is not respected, and your privacy is not respected.
I'm actually curious to get your perspective on it more than I am eager to talk about my own, because you use a wheelchair, and I know you think that your wheelchair is an extension of yourself. I know, right? You do. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I believe you do. You've told me that before, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. So basically, you know, if I touch your wheelchair, you know, to you, I'm touching you, even if it's not, you know, physically attached to you, whatever. But that's interesting to me because I don't. And so you're only touching me when you're actually physically touching me. So I think that it's super interesting to have the belief and feeling that your body extends to your mobility aids. And I can totally see why. I mean, because obviously, like, you need them to move and be a person. But I just think it's interesting. And I'm really curious to hear how that particular aspect has affected you.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on that. But I would first counter with, I know you have personal space issues in your own. I mean,
oh, absolutely. No, yeah, I totally do. I've got tons of them. But I mean,
and I think that's largely a sensory thing with you. People mm-hmm. touching you in a certain way or in a certain spot, or if you had no warning, I know you're very sensitive to that.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely. Absolutely. You know. I'm not saying that you're like you're alone in this not liking being touched thing. I really hate it in general as well.
No, touching you is like you got to earn that, right? And I don't mean that in a weird way at all.
I mean, to our listeners, it's literally true. I really I'm picky.
Yeah. So, and also, I feel the urge to clarify that I literally mean any sort of physical touch. So, like, being in Kyle's general vicinity.
Yep.
So that's like a trust thing, but I would argue also somewhere in there, like a mental or a disability thing, because someone touching you can also really throw you off balance.
Oh yeah. I mean, and it's
super dangerous.
And it's arguably caused by, the disability I have. I mean,
yeah,
you know, jury's out on whether or not I'm actually on the spectrum. Like I've literally, it's no one knows, but I try not to like bring that up because like, I don't really think that matters. But the sensory issues that I do have that are documented can be nearly directly attributed to my CP. So, you know, that's certainly where most of them probably come from.
Yeah. And I didn't mean to like turn your question back on you, but just because I didn't want people listening to think that it was going to be all me. And
it's
also
all good, man.
Clarify, too, that there are multiple types of bodily autonomy that we're talking about. So we're literally talking about physical touch, but we're also talking about, in relation to the L article, which we'll get to after I answer Kyle's question, about, you know, putting things out there in the world. So it's physical and it's metaphysical. Is that what
this
I'm looking for?
This is going to be a long one, folks. Yeah.
I don't know if I was using the right word there, but anyway, so to answer your question, I do think of my wheelchair as part of my body because it's essentially a stand-in for my legs. Stand-in, get it? So since it is my means of getting around all the time, it's part of who I am. And I mean that, yes, in an identity sense, but right now I'm talking about physically, it might as well be glued to my butt.
Right.
And people seem to think that it is okay to use my wheelchair as an armrest, a coat rack, a place to lean on, something to hold on to, something to touch just because they feel like they can.
This is where Emily's being passive aggressive because I do that all the time. I'm just messing with you. But I really do that all the time. I know that when I do it, it's okay because we know each other. But
yeah, again, okay, like actually maybe it's a good thing that I talked about your bodily autonomy issues first, because I have earned the right to be all up in your grill if I feel like it.
And I guess can use you as an armrest when I feel like
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But also, and this is an exclusively a disability thing, oftentimes, as much as I know touch might be you showing some kind of like friendly affection, I also know that you're probably using me for balance.
Oh, yeah, almost always. I mean, unless it's like a hug or something.
Sure.
Like, but like, yeah.
So, you know, I I'm very much aware that if you grab me without asking, you, like you, Kyle Khachaturian, not anyone else, grabs me without asking, that I just automatically understand, like, you needed to grab me in that moment.
And it's funny because if in those cases, even though, like, I know it's okay, and you know that I know it's okay, and we're all very, like, understanding that this is a consensual thing, that I still apologize, like, I just, like, ran over your dog or something. Like, I feel really, like, bad about it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But there's a greater understanding and awareness and acceptance and kinship, whatever, between us. But strangers will hold on to my wheelchair like it's their armrest, and they will touch it without asking or lean on it without asking, come up behind me and try to push it or move it without asking. And my personal favorite is when I'm in some kind of a setting where I'm sitting in my wheelchair and someone leans on my wheelchair and starts talking, like having a conversation with another person, and I'm just sort of a prop for them.
That's pretty funny to me, because like the able-bodied equivalent would literally be if somebody was having a conversation with their friend while leaned up against another dude. Like, that's a weird, like, think about that if you're listening. Just think about how strange that is. That's exactly the same feel. I mean, right? Is it?
Yeah. It absolutely is. This is what I try to tell people. But people seem to think that somehow a wheelchair is a different entity unto itself just because it's a machine and it's not my legs. My physical legs.
Right.
But sometimes it's really embarrassing. Perfect example, I think back to high school a lot. I had a couple teachers who thought that my wheelchair would be a great place for them to slouch and rest their arms while they were lecturing the class. Because in high school, I would transfer out of my wheelchair to a regular desk, park my wheelchair right next to me, and so it would sort of be blocking the aisle, but rather than respect the fact that that is still my very expensive piece of equipment and it's still right next to me, teachers would just come up and lean on it and continue lecturing in the class like they weren't leaning on what is essentially a pair of legs that I just had to pop off for a little while and leave next to me.
Yeah, like that's that, to me, that's ridiculous. And I hope to all of you it's ridiculous too.
Well, I've also kind of been accused of being oversensitive of that.
I guess I could probably think about times when you were being oversensitive specifically. I don't know if like I can think of one right at the moment, but I don't think that that's being oversensitive. Unless the only time I would say that something like that is oversensitive is when you sort of know you're in the way, but there's no other alternative because the place isn't really as accessible as they thought it was. And like the only spot that they have for you is you're in the way of somebody. And then, yes, I would say maybe you're oversensitive, but not because you are. It's because you're therefore then hyper aware of everyone having to go around you because you know that you're in the way.
I am hyper aware. I swear I have a sixth sense when it comes to my wheelchair and people touching it. Even if I can't see it, I swear I feel it. And I know people are going to tell me that I must have taken a drug before we did this podcast, but I sincerely mean it. There's some slight change in pressure of my equilibrium where someone will like stick their foot up on my wheelchair and I'll just kind of feel the momentary movement and know that something is not quite right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's too crazy.
But then sometimes people will just like put their arm on it and it doesn't shake the chair, but I just get the sense that someone is behind me touching me.
Sure. See what you just said? You said touching me. That's interesting. I like that.
Yeah, because it's me. I mean, I am so inextricably linked to my wheelchair, and this is not a matter of identity.
No. This is literal. This is pretty. But it's funny, you know, just the way we talk. It's like when you break your arm, you don't say, "Oh, I broke me." You say, "I broke my arm." It's like, "Oh, it's mine." You know, it's just, it's a weird thing that when you say that, like, "Oh, stop touching me," even though it's not the body that you live in. It's the machine attached to the body. It's just a weird thing. And then it's sort of...
I love how you're putting that.
Why? Let's talk about it.
It's fascinating to me. I guess I never really thought to break it down in that way. As much as I always say that my wheelchair is a part of me, you're absolutely right. I'm not really going to say, stop touching my wheelchair. I mean, I might, you know, depending on what comes out of my mouth at the moment. But there are plenty of times where I've just outright said, can you stop touching me?
Yeah, but at the same time, if your wheelchair breaks, you don't say, oh, I broke today. It's just an odd thing. It's nothing like...
So I wonder if that's like a matter of semantics or if there's something going on in my head.
Well, it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, linguistically, there are languages that say, I broke myself in the leg, for example. English doesn't do that, but there are languages that do. But it's just interesting to hear you speak in that way, because that's something I literally cannot understand.
When I'm separated from the wheelchair, it becomes my wheelchair and not me.
Even though it's
still a part of me.
That's really interesting, then.
So when I'm not sitting in it, for example, let's say something I do frequently, I fly pretty frequently.
Or like right now?
For work. Or right now. Yeah. Better example than airplanes, because screw airplanes, really. So I'm sitting in an armchair in my living room in my house, and my wheelchair is next to me. It's not me next to me. It's my wheelchair.
One more question, and then we can sort of go on to the...
No, I love this. Go on.
Well, of course, we're talking about you. Of course you love it.
No.
But I know.
Come on. Be nice.
So now let's say that you're doing this and I'm in your house. I'm not, but let's say I was and I sat in your wheelchair because it's closer to you than the other chair. You wouldn't say, oh, get off me. You'd say, get out of my wheelchair. It's a weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but that also, and I know this wasn't what you were getting at, but that also points to something really interesting. So even when I'm not in it and it's not me and it's just my object, it is still so inextricably linked to me that if somebody sits in it or touches it while I'm not in it and I don't know them, oh my goodness.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously it's like that's... But I mean, like, at that point, it's like, I mean, my sister's almost like that when people lean on her car. That's not the same thing at all, but she's got that
sort of... I might be like that too, because I really love my car.
I think you are. I mean, look, man, they both get you from point A to point B. I'm not saying that they're similar in any other way, but...
But I have a story, actually, for real, that points to this issue, which is in the early days of living with my college roommate, who I love dearly, love her, and she's definitely one of the most disability conscious people I know now, but I had two wheelchairs with me in college. One of them was my manual wheelchair and one of them was my power wheelchair, and depending on what time of day it was or where I was going, I would be in a different wheelchair, so there would always be an empty one in the room. So she had one of her friends in our room for a little while, and she offered up my empty wheelchair as a seat.
Did you teach her a lesson?
Afterwards. Well,
I mean, because I'm sure you were fine during. Like, that would just make you look
weird. I was silently fuming, but I didn't want to make a scene because...
That's what I mean, yeah.
You know, that's just whatever. In retrospect, I could have just said, hey, can you not sit there? But when she left, I said, look, I love you, but that was not cool. Like, that's not a chair for you to offer to people that I don't know.
Yeah. So mobility aids are certainly one aspect of bodily autonomy, but there are countless others. I think, remember a couple of years ago, we were talking about this the last time we tried to make this episode, where, what was it, NPR or someone, they posted a photo essay or whatever about these parents with this child who had various disabilities or whatnot. And he was 16 years old and they took very, I don't want to say compromising, but intimate.
But like kinda.
Yeah, no.
Intimate moments.
Yeah.
Private moments.
Of him in like a diaper or something like that. And the parents, you know, gave consent to publish the photos to whatever news outlet they were, and there was an article attached to it about whatever, like how difficult it is being a parent of a kid with disability or some bull.
Yeah,
like
no, that. It literally was the story of them caregiving.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, I guess that's a topic for another day, but, you know, we as disabled people are sort of empathetic to a point, but that's where the line is right there. That's a little bit, that's a little bit too much. But anyway, the point is that the article was, you know, very raw and powerful and whatever, but that they just published the picture of this kid. And 16, you know, should be old enough to be able to say, hey, you know, mom, dad, hey, I don't want my photo in this article, right? Now, granted, this kid had some kind of intellectual disability that sort of, you know, made it so that he probably couldn't consent by himself. But that shouldn't, therefore, then give the parents full authority over using his likeness. It's one thing if it's like for a life-changing surgery or life-saving surgery or something like that. It's the same thing with babies. But like, you know, when you for surgery, not comparing the 16-year-old to a baby. Emily made a face. I just want to clarify. But, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, power of autonomy when it's something that you can't control that is objectively better for you, like something that'll save your life that you can't consent to because you're sick or you have some sort of intellectual disability or something or other. That's one thing. But it's quite another to publish your photos, your likeness, anything without your consent anywhere where people can see. Now, the reason that that's a problem is because it wouldn't have happened had the 16-year-old been any other 16-year-old. Now, there is a chance that it had it
you
been
mean
a typical...
any other...
I'm sorry, neurotypical...
16-year-old...
Or non-disabled 16-year-old or whatever.
Able to consent in some way.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, maybe, you know, if the 16-year-old didn't care. But I know that, you know, when I was 16... I was very embarrassed about myself, and I certainly wouldn't like pictures like that up on the internet anywhere, especially anywhere near my parents. So everything about that just sort of made me very uncomfortable, and it's something I really don't say a lot. You know, it takes a lot for me to say that, and I think that removal of bodily autonomy, especially in the sense of personal privacy, is something that I care deeply about, and yeah, it just bothered me.
Yeah.
And that's another example of, like, even though you're not physically doing something to somebody's body, you're still by proxy removing their autonomy.
Right. And it is comparable to a matter of autonomy in a sense of being touched or not, because for some reason, there's this binary where it's like, oh, if he was non-disabled, would you have posted a picture of your 16-year-old able-bodied son in a diaper on Facebook? No, absolutely not. But for some reason, it's suddenly okay because he's disabled. If I was non-disabled, would you grab me by the shoulder or like put your arm on my head or hang your coat off of me? Absolutely not. But because I'm disabled and happen to have mobility equipment, like, it's fine. You have free reign, apparently, in your head. So there's just this sort of...
It's literal objectification.
Yeah. It's an either or situation. So if you're non-disabled, then, you know, whatever, we'll leave you alone. I mean, obviously that is not true because bodily autonomy is a huge issue for many, many people. But I'm just using...
No, we're talking about this in terms of disability, though.
Right. Like, so I'm saying
there is
just
definitely
clarifying.
A binary there. There is 100% a binary there, though.
And it's frustrating because I never quite feel like my body is my own, whether it's being stared at, whether it's being touched, whether it's being posted on the internet, not me per se, but, you know, anyone. This is just a generalization about disability. I just have never fully felt like I have complete ownership over my body.
Oh, I do. And but I'm saying everyone should strive to. I know that's a privilege to say, you know, in our world, but, you know, it's something that everyone should do their best to strive toward because, I mean, we don't have much else, really. That's all we really have is our bodies. And when you don't have, like, that's the thing. If you take that away from somebody, like, I'm talking philosophically, you know, but still.
No, but it's true. Our body is what houses who we are.
And what we are.
And I do think, in this case, it makes sense for me to bring up the fact that I am female and physically disabled sometimes gives rise to concern about the ways in which my body could possibly be objectified and there would be nothing I could do about it.
Yeah, that's not good.
freaks me out a lot.
That's pretty nasty.
I mean, I've read horror stories of women who are wheelchair users, you know, having their wheelchair taken away from them as a way to prevent them from escaping
I actually know people, not as severe as a rape, but it was basically kidnapping, which, you know, apples and oranges, but still pretty nasty apples and oranges. And, you know, I know people who that's happened to. I won't name names, and you don't know any of them, but it's not cool. It's not cool. No,
it's scary. It's really scary.
And, you know, the answer is also no, you know, to the question of would that have happened to somebody? Were they not disabled? Of course it wouldn't have. I mean, of course, able-bodied people get kidnapped and raped. That's not like what I'm saying, but like.
But it's not the wheelchair being taken away.
Right. There's no sort of mode by which you can do it in a way that the greater people, like, yeah, there's not like one route by which if you remove this one thing, therefore you've done that. In the same way where if you take Emily's wheelchair away, she can't leave the house. Or something.
I've gotten to the point where if someone leaves the room and I'm not sitting in my wheelchair, but they moved my wheelchair and it's not near me, that I will make sure to remind them, please put that back guy like right next to me because.
Well, you I'm should. Afraid. I mean, that's ridiculous. You sure. Need to.
But it's become this major fear that the one time I'm left without my chair is the one time I'm going to need to escape the house because there's a fire.
I mean, the fire part of that is pretty irrational, but I mean, that's...
You know what I mean, though?
Of course I do. You don't need to use a wheelchair and not be able to move without it just to know what that means. You know, no one likes the idea of being trapped somewhere. That's a totally rational fear.
Yeah, and that is a way to trap someone, to take away their source of mobility. But it's also, sometimes you feel, and I guess I'm getting a little bit too philosophical here, but sometimes it feels like, please, I'm in a trap because I am constantly objectified or subjected to being treated like my body is not quite my own because of my wheelchair. Another example, which just occurred to me.
Hold on, I have a question.
What?
You don't have to answer right away because I want you, because I know you have your thought. But is your body really your own if you need your wheelchair to essentially use the rest of your body? Now, that's an honest, like, philosophical question. I don't think you'll have an answer for it. I don't expect you to have an answer for it. But think about it, really. I'm not saying it shouldn't be. It obviously should be. Like, I'm 100%, and so are you, pro bodily autonomy. But it's a weird thing to think about, isn't it? I know you're making a thinking face right now.
Stay tuned for my philosophical book on this.
I don't mean to throw you in like an existential crisis, but continue.
No, I'm
sorry.
I have one now. After
oh,
this
Jesus
podcast
Christ.
Is
I'm
over.
Sorry. God
damn. I'm already spiraling. I feel it. But to go back to what I was going to say earlier, another way that my body is constantly not my own, although it's improved over the years, but it used to be so frustrating, was I was always a teachable moment, going back to this teachable moment thing, for medical students. So, and oftentimes it was not voluntary. So I'd be laying there in various states of disarray in a doctor's office or a hospital, and the doctor would come in along with his 27 medical residents, and I would be on display.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, about like I wasn't there.
That's happened to, I mean, I'm not saying it's not because of your disability, but that does happen to other people too.
I don't think it's right whether you have a disability or not, but
no,
at the same time,
it's
I
not.
Understand that doctors need to learn.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's not right at all, but you know how at this, I'm not going to say it's a necessary evil because I wouldn't say that something like that is evil, but like it's something that unfortunately does need to happen in order for us to have doctors in the world.
Well, for me, it was that I always struggled with listening to a medical professional tell aspiring medical professionals what's wrong with me when
I am
in fact the
expert.
Right.
Right. And also you're like right there. Yeah, exactly. God, that's an odd feeling, isn't it? I mean, I've never felt it, but like just imagining that.
Ooh, so uncomfortable.
On edge. Yeah, that's weird.
So uncomfortable. But then there are times where I'm like willing to objectify myself or tokenize myself.
You're
maybe
not
it's
objectifying yourself if you're doing it.
Well, yeah,
you're choosing
I realize
how to
that.
You're choosing how to be.
Right, but I'm willing to make myself the token to speak to medical students. I've done that. There's this video of me when I was 4 years old, and my orthopedist was filming it for her med students, and she was trying to explain the various features of my disability, and there I am, four-year-old Emily, going on, because I clearly thought that I was explaining my disability to them.
That's hilarious.
But that's the thing, like, I miss that feeling of thinking that I am entirely in control, because I've been poked and prodded and stared at and all that stuff so much that I no longer fully have that feeling. But at 4 years old, I was not yet corrupted enough to think that, you know, I wasn't the one who was telling those medical students about me.
You know, I mean, how much do you really know about your disability at 4 years old anyway, right?
You'd be surprised. My parents drilled it into me.
Well, that is pretty cool, though.
Like, okay, tell me something. Did you always grow up with, like, knowledge of your disability and how it impacts your body?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of kids have that.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, I don't remember the age at which they use the term cerebral palsy, but also at the same time, I went to special school where I was told by everyone around me what I had, so even if they didn't do it, I certainly knew about it. They never treated me any different, except for when I needed to be treated differently.
Right.
I don't think that they used the word disabled all throughout my childhood, except for in a medical context, to their credit.
Really?
Yeah. I don't mean that that's a good or bad thing. I just think that, like, that's a difficult thing to do when you have a disabled kid.
I've always had a conscious awareness of my disability. I've always known that it was an intrinsic part of my being. I mean,
But I didn't think anything of it in the same way I really don't now. Like, it's just, oh, okay, I guess that's a thing.
No, sure, but I don't think I realized until later on. I was like, oh, this is a thing. For a while, it was just like, okay.
Yeah,
I'm
mean,
gonna I accept whatever.
I don't really know, like, when that change happened within me, but I get, you know, most changes you're not really conscious of when they happen, right?
Sure. And I know this has been a little bit all over the place, but the reality is that bodily autonomy has several different levels to it, and all of them are equally important. And when you have a disability, chances are you're going to have your bodily autonomy. Let's see how many times we said that in this podcast.
I'll tell you what the keyword is for this episode.
Violated.
Well, yeah. You're
going to have that violated.
Well, certainly more than, you know, your average able-bodied human being, I think.
Do you have any particular experiences where you feel like someone kind of invaded your, God, I'm going to say it again, bodily autonomy? But that is my question, because I can think of so many off the top of my head, and I'm just sort of wondering if you have any experiences.
You mean, like, related to my disability?
Sure, because
not really, not in the same way that you're talking about. Yes, but not in the same way. Like, with me, like you brought up earlier, like, it's usually always a sensory thing, which is almost always inward and, you know, like a internal screaming type thing, where with you it's external because your wheelchair is, like, on the outside of you and there's no way to do it. Even if you might have an internal struggle, there's really no way to, like, let somebody know what they're doing to you without saying it, because it's right there in front of you. It's underneath you and in front of them. Whereas with me, most of it is, like, sensory. So if somebody, like, touches me and I'm not expecting it, or, you know, anything like that, if you invade my space, like, I'll flip out and, like, it'll set off my startle reflex and I'll, like, have, like, a cold sweat in the back of my neck or something like that. But I'll, like, appear fine, or at least as fine as I think. I probably look like a nervous wreck, to be honest, but I certainly don't, I don't think I feel, like, violated in the way that you are discussing. It would be interesting. I would be surprised if we could somehow quantify that and they would end up being the same thing.
What if you're falling and someone grabs you?
Nope, I love that. Please do that. Please do that. That is the one time that's fine. Absolutely, 100%, always okay.
I can
never
think
not
of,
okay. Never
I
not
can think of so many disabled people who would agree with you like wholeheartedly.
There hasn't been a time where helping me mid-fall has made it worse. There have been times where unwanted help, again, for like the 87,000th time, has led to my inevitable injury being that much more worse. But that's
more
not
worse.
Yeah, like if I'm leaning on something like a door and you open the door and I fall forward and hit the ground, that's because you tried to help when I didn't need it.
Yeah.
Something
I feel
like that.
You.
But if I'm going down, like, yo, help me. Don't be shy. Because I'm not thinking about my sensory issues in that moment, and neither is the rest of my brain. You know, like.
No, you're just thinking about flailing and yeah. Whatever general direction you're about to hit the floor.
Right. And bodily autonomy is something that, like, I said it before, like, if you don't have that, like, what. It's a very ingrained part of being a person. Forget a person with a disability. That just gives you entire, like, the only credence that gives us to talk about it more than, you know, anyone is the fact that we don't have less of it. Everyone has the same amount of it. It's just that ours is more contested and challenged, I guess. You know, we're not able-bodied, but probably more than able-bodied people. And it's bad to contest bodily autonomy, in my view. Always. I mean, obviously, like, if you're a violent prisoner, I know someone's going to be like, oh, what if blah, blah, blah. Yeah, of course there are exceptions, but as a general rule, like, bodily autonomy is probably one of the only things I feel is pretty absolute.
You know what we should have done?
What's that?
We should have made this podcast episode a drinking game in which you take a shot.
Oh, yeah, every time you say bodily autonomy, we'd be dead. But there are, and, you know, we're not going to go really deep into this now, but there are exceptions within the disability community about bodily autonomy, particularly when it comes to things like assisted suicide or.
Wait up, pull that out.
No, I don't want to talk. It's 37 minutes in. We're almost done. So, but not only assisted suicide, but also in cases where, like, a mother is pregnant with the child and the child has a disability, is it okay for her to have an abortion? And when speaking about that within the disability community, it goes beyond the general, you know, pro-life, pro-choice thing. You know, it's very uncommon to hear disabled people come out and support or something like that. The only time you'll ever hear it is if they preface it with, well, I'm only doing so because I'm staunchly pro-choice no matter what, but this is still a disgusting thing to do, or something like that. That is another example where, even though it's not us, you know, we tend to pull our reins in. I'm not going to say what my opinion is. I don't know if Emily's going to be brave.
I'm going to say what my opinion is, because if you have listened far enough into this podcast, then you get to hear my opinion. And that is, we have a double standard in the disability community because bodily autonomy is something we all deserve until suddenly we're like, nah, I want to exercise my bodily autonomy and die. And then we're like, no.
Wow, you're really doing this. Okay. Yeah, me too. That's how I feel. And I know, like, there are very legitimate arguments for the slippery slope. I know, I'm not discounting that. I know.
Nah, man, you shouldn't even say it like that, because those are legitimate arguments. They're legitimate.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm saying I'm
but
aware.
But you were like, slippery slope.
No, I'm saying it like that because I know what's coming. I know what's coming. And that's absolutely true. And yeah, it's there and it's valid. But does that justify, because of a fear based on legitimate data, something that can be avoided with, you know, training doctors not to immediately recommend it to disabled people, rather than removing bodily autonomy entirely? I don't think so. I don't think removing bodily autonomy and removing somebody's ability to choose what they do with their own body is the right choice and course of action for anything, including the right to choose if you want to die.
Yep. I want to be able to choose every aspect of my life, and that includes dying.
At the same time, I would say the same thing about a mother who decides to abort a baby for whatever reason. I might think her reasoning is wrong, and I might think that she's wrong in doing so and whatever, but that's also bodily autonomy. And that's
sure, but I'd be super mad about it.
No, of course. No one's pro-abortion.
No, I'm sure there are plenty of people who are pro-abortion and probably going to, like, smack you over the face with a skillet for that. But I
think
the problem is I'm pro-choice, but obviously, like, pro-life in the sense that I want a baby with a disability to be born, even though they have a disability.
I do, too. But when I say I'm not pro-abortion, I mean that it's, like, a necessary evil. Even though it's probably someone that, like,
everyone to listen to the end of this podcast, because that's where we get real.
Yeah. So when I say I'm anti-abortion, I don't mean that I don't think women should, you know, have the choice. Of course they should. Everyone should. That's ridiculous. Like, you should. What I mean is that it's something that nobody looks forward to doing. Show me one. I challenge anyone listening to this to show
you. I guarantee
one.
You. Oh, I, you're no, going to eat I'm, your damn words on I, that
I,
one.
I'm looking forward to it. I swear to God. Show me one person. And I don't mean the relief afterward of having one. I mean, like, the journey of going there. I know people who've had one. I've read stories. I don't have any firsthand experience because I am a man. You know, but I would genuinely love to know that, because I would change my mind. I really would. Having said that, when it comes to...
I don't think anybody, like, goes to the clinic and is like, I'm going to have an abortion today.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. But what I will say is that if you are somebody, you know, who chooses to terminate a pregnancy because you, you know, got some test result back and thinks that it's...
your baby has Down syndrome.
Whatever. Like, you're in your right to do that. I would be total hypocrite if I ranted about how important bodily autonomy is for 42 minutes. If I didn't think you were in the right to do that.
But I'm going to be mad about it.
Yeah, I'm not going to be happy about it. I mean, I wouldn't be a good quote-unquote disabled TM person if I wasn't going to be mad about it.
Hashtag real disabled.
I'm not going to be mad that you exercise your right to choose.
No, I'm going to be mad because of why you exercise your right to choose.
Yeah, that's a different thing. And it's a very important distinction, particularly in cases just like this.
Sure. Which goes back to the need for information and education and, you know, teaching people that disability is not altogether the worst thing in the entire world.
No, but it's also a reminder to us that it's also not the best thing in the world. And that, you know, that's why part of the reason we do this. And I know that, you know, in every episode that we have, we sort of touch on why we do this. But one of the reasons is, you know, we really try to, you know, not romanticize this ability, but not also to, you know, not like shine it in the worst light either, you know, because in our community, you get like this weird idea from the general populace that like having a disability like is not only not bad, but it's also like good and should be like loved, and everyone should love themselves. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but like there are certain things about having a disability that do suck. And
everything
like,
is not always coming up roses.
Right. And so, you know, if you don't talk about that, that's sort of like, in my opinion, doing a huge disservice. And that's sort of.
Yeah. So I think we try to be balanced in the sense that, you know, we don't want people to think we lead some miserable existence. But it's also not like a walk in the park all the time or a roll in the park.
I mean, you know, we're pretty miserable, but it's not because we're disabled. We're just depressed. Now.
And stay tuned for our next episode on mental health issues.
I mean, sure, I guess. Now we have to. Thanks. But anyway, my final takeaway is that if you are disabled, the odds of your bodily autonomy being challenged is probably much greater than, you know, your average able-bodied counterpoint. And it's a thing that everyone should have. It's a thing that, you know, defines, like, people and schools of thought. Like, it's like probably one of the most important things in the world, and you shouldn't ever have it challenged, let alone taken away by anyone other than you, especially not through circumstances of your birth, like a disability. That's ridiculous. In fact, that's like the worst reason to ever, oh, you were born this way, oh, you guess you don't get to be a person. Like, that's stupid. Don't think that way. You're wrong.
I have a less verbose takeaway. My body, my choice.
Hey.
Nah, but for real, though.
No, really, though.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
Or like her wheelchair. Or her wheelchair. She's making a face at me because she said me, and it includes a wheelchair. So you listen. You know what I'm getting at.
I know what you mean. Don't touch me unless I like you. Then probably still don't touch me. But yeah. If you're Kyle, it's fine.
Oh, come on. That makes it sound like I'm the only one that don't do that to these people.
I'm kidding. I'm obviously kidding. No, it's funny because I actually am a very touchy-feely person.
And I'm like not.
Like, I am a hugger. I am a toucher.
God, she is the worst.
Or the best.
No, you're actually I mean,
I am so great.
You're the worst person I know.
I know.
Anyway, that was it for this episode of The Accessible Soul. Thank you for like listening and waiting around for us for 45 minutes trying to make sense of something that is you could probably write a dissertation about.
I have one more thing to say, though.
Oh, sure. Go on.
Bodily autonomy.
Oh, yeah. And furthermore, bodily autonomy. And finally, bodily autonomy.
And finally, for real this time, all together now.
Bodily autonomy. Hooray. If you're playing that drinking game, I'm sorry. This releases the accessible soul from any legal ramifications of instantaneous death upon alcohol poisoning and all that. Okay.
We're not lawyers, but don't sue us if you played our drinking game and died.
But, you know, we're not
in lawyers. The last 10 minutes.
So, anyway, that's it for this episode of the accessible soul. We don't know how to end episodes. Good night, everybody.
How do we know it's nighttime? I say this every time. What if it's not nighttime?
Then listen to this when it's going to be night in 45 minutes. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.